I just wrapped up an interview with Rocky Lalvani. Rocky is a certified profit first coach that works with business owners and advise them on how to be more profitable in their businesses. I learned so much during this conversation because I felt literally being coached on being profitable and also how to, you know, how to make and keep money, which is sometimes a challenge we business owners have, how to keep money, right? Because we're always focused on how to make money, but the keeping money is even maybe even more important, because if you can't make money, but if you can't keep it, then it doesn't help. So amazing interview. Rocky also put me on a spot on a question he asked me. And I would say you guys find out by listening to the show. So as always, please hit subscribe. And like the show, this is the only way we can get in front of more people, more immigrant entrepreneurs. And hey, if you have a friend or if you know any other immigrant entrepreneurs, please share it with them, because that's how we get the word out and how we can grow this show. So thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy the show. Welcome to the Immigrant Entrepreneurs Show, where our mission is to inspire, impact, and influence other immigrants to follow their dreams and create the future they want and desire. My guest today is Rocky Lalvani. Rocky, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here with you today.
Absolutely. I can't wait to talk about all the good things that we're going to cover on this show, specifically money, because that's your expertise. And Rocky, but first, before we get there, give us a quick idea of, you're obviously an immigrant, but you know, where were you born and what's the backstory?
So I was born in India, and my parents had to not re-immigrate, but where they were in India, where they originally grew up, got split apart when Pakistan was separated from India. So they pretty much had to flee and find a new home. So they moved to Bombay probably in their right around 20s, early 20s. So they essentially started over. And then about 20 years later, they decided to immigrate to the United States. And so I was born in India, came here at a very young age. But again, when you start over in life, you know, you're always on the wrong side of the track, so to speak. You have to go through that. And the world was very different then as far as moving money and so forth. But what I noticed was they, along with many of their friends, kind of moved up that social economic ladder relatively quickly. It wasn't like we started there and we stayed there for a long time. They brought the principles, the beliefs, the way that they did things, the way that they already knew how to kind of start over and get going. And they came here and they did that. And part of that is kind of what you're talking about, the money story. Money conversations were normal. Like the adults would get together and talk about money. It's like, oh, how much did you pay for that? Did you get a discount? How much do you make? Like all those conversations were just natural. So money wasn't so much taboo. The other thing is, I think we were all expected to succeed. Like there was no, oh, you're an immigrant to, you know, it was like, hey, you're expected to succeed. And their attitude was like, hey, when in Rome, do as the Romans. So, you know, adapt to the culture. Mm-hmm. We've come here, figure it out, and build your wealth and have your success. The world is yours for your taking. So I think I had these great foundation. And some of those people had massive success much quicker. And so I got to see all the different levels of how people lived. And, you know, as a young kid, I wanted to be wealthy. because that's what we do here in America, right? Mm-hmm. Get wealthy. And so I just was, you know, I had no problem working hard. And I had no problem with how to live below my means and how to save and be frugal while still living a good life and kind of building wealth.
I see. Thanks for that background story. So, but there was no money, like within the family, there was no wealth or money that you guys brought from India to the US when you immigrated.
All their wealth was in their head.
Right.
It wasn't in their pocketbook.
Right, right.
Yeah. So no, they essentially started over, and we did not live in the nicest of places, but within, little by little, it would get better.
I see. So, and then what happened in your own life and with, where you are obviously today, we will get there. But what happened? Did you started going after entrepreneurship, or what was it like?
So as a kid, yes. As a kid, I would go out and hustle and make a buck. And I was always doing that. But then we were told you have to go to college. I had no desire to go to college. But
did you have someone to look up to when you were doing hustling as a kid and, you know?
Not really. I think it was just, I don't know how that came to be. I just know I wanted money.
Hmm.
And somehow it just came to be where I would buy stuff. And I think because I was good at buying stuff cheap, that I could then, like, people were willing to buy it off of me. And so it was probably somewhat accidental. There was no internet. There was no podcast. Mm-hmm. There was no, like, I wouldn't even know where to look for a business book or how to tell which one was good or bad. You know, what I got was at the library. And back then, I don't know that I was reading a ton of, I would read like the Wall Street Journal, but they don't teach you how to really build a business. And back then, you have to realize information was gold back then. Today, information's free. It's on the internet. Back then, it was just a different world.
Right.
So I don't know that I had anyone to look up to, and I don't know that I was wise enough to listen.
Right. Right. Okay. So as a kid, you're doing these things and then you grow up and then what happens from there?
So I go to college. Again, mm-hmm. I wasn't thrilled to be in college. Didn't get the greatest grades, but got through, graduated, and, hey, you got to go get a job. So I went out looking for jobs and I ended up in sales and I did well. Sales is not my natural ability. I just kind of lucked into it. But within, I would say, 24 months, I was making money hand over fist, mm-hmm. like because I understood the principles. Mm. So when you understand the principles, you can figure out, okay, if this is how you're going to pay me, how do I maximize that? How do mm-hmm. I get maximum commissions? How do I play games in this system to be able to do that? Now, at that point, yeah, I would look like who's successful here. How are they building success? What are the principles of doing that? And so I think that was important. And then I started to improve myself. Like I would put time and effort into getting better. And so that kind of leapfrogged where I was having a good living. And the problem is good is the enemy of great. It was comfortable. It was enough. But it wasn't that bigger picture, so to speak.
And when you say I was making good, decent money, was it all from sales, like selling for other people, or was it also selling your own products?
No, it was all sales, working for companies, selling their products. And honestly, I think what happens there is you get beat down a little. You
right.
get locked into something and you don't realize that you're kind of getting squeezed.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that. And there's also the whole thing being an immigrant, right? Back then, it wasn't like it is today. There mm-hmm. weren't that many people who were, you know, the world back then was black and white. Mm-hmm. So if you weren't black or white, you didn't fit in. And you already know back in the 60s and into the early 70s, it wasn't, you know, race relations weren't great. Mm. So I think it was, you know, we grew up that those people had success. And I didn't really, like, you know, I was trying to fit my way through the system and at least get my piece of the pie and do okay. And I didn't realize how much opportunity was really out there. I didn't. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a good idea because I didn't have great mentors of what was possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So life was good, but not great. And you're, you know, you're being comfortable and living your day-to-day life. But then obviously something changed, or I hope something changed.
Well, yeah, no, honestly. So as part of that principle, though, the one thing that I did do was I knew the math of building wealth. Mm-hmm. So I had a simple goal. I want to be a millionaire. And I sat down and I did the math and I say, okay, based on how much I make, if I save this much, if I invest it and I grow it, I will be able to achieve that. And so I did that. And the longer I worked, the more the stupidity of corporate happened, the less I worked for the same amount of money. And so I did have time freedom through that whole period, more so. And I just started automating my finances and building wealth, investing in the stock market, eventually got into real estate and did some stuff with real estate. But it was slow. This was not the rocket to doing that. And I realized my skill set is knowing how to keep money. Everyone knows how, like a lot of people know how to make money. Very few people know how to keep money. And that is truly the skill I have, is knowing how to keep it. And it's how to live frugal. And I think this is where people get it wrong. I can live frugal, travel the world, have wonderful lifestyles, but I don't have to spend a fortune. As a matter of fact, my daughter called me the other day because they want to go to Disney. She was like, how much did you spend when you took us to Disney as kids? Like, how much were tickets? And back then, what I would do, because I figured it out, if you bought a Disney ticket for one day, it was like some ridiculous amount. 3 days was okay, like maybe double what the 1 day ticket was. But the 10-day ticket was only like 10% more than the 3-day ticket. Mm. I'm like, okay, we're already in Florida. I already paid for the airfare. Let's get the 10-day ticket to Disney. And instead of staying in hotels, I would rent timeshares from people who bought these timeshares and didn't use them. So they'd rent me a 2-bedroom timeshare or a 3-bedroom timeshare for less than the cost of a hotel. So we're down there at Disney, you know, for next to nothing, but living the full experience and having lots of fun. And because we weren't rushed, we could just take our time through the park. Mm. But that's just a classic example of how you do it. I also like traveling off season. The reason I like traveling off season is I hate crowds. Mm-hmm. I don't want to deal with, I'd rather go right before everyone comes or right after everyone leaves. Right. But your cost at that point is a third. So you can still have a nice lifestyle for a fraction of the money. And so that's the way, like every part of our life was optimized. How do I get maximum lifestyle for the least amount of money?
Mm. Where did you learn this?
I think that was just kind of the way we were raised. We were always just taught, like, you can have a luxury lifestyle on a frugal budget.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was just kind of what it was. And I didn't get trapped into, I have to have this. Or, I mean, yes, to some extent, but not like I think most people. And honestly, I'm shocked at how little people even understand how to negotiate. I used to negotiate everything. Mm-hmm. Like I negotiated with Home Depot and Sears. Like you can negotiate everywhere if you choose to. Mm-hmm. And nowadays it's changed, but there is still the ability to do that. And you just have to be willing to try.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it was just that practice.
Right. And I also believe negotiating, it's kind of a little uncomfortable, you know, because now you're talking to people, you're trying to move them, which could feel, I'm not saying all the time, but could feel uncomfortable. Maybe that's the reason people are not willing to do it, because they just want to go for the easy route. Okay, it's that much, let me pay it and just move on.
So that's ego, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's ego because they tie the price they pay to the value, which is totally false. And American culture is not negotiation. In India, everything's negotiated.
Right, right.
So it's just, it's natural culture. Mm-hmm. And when I was a kid, we'd go to India. So you'd go on the street and you'd learn to negotiate. And mm-hmm. so you take those skills and you come back. And when I was going into New York City and buying stuff as a kid, it was negotiation. Like, you ask, what's the worst they say? No, like, I'm a kid, what do I care?
Mm-hmm.
Or you just find mismatches in what's going on. There's always mismatches in pricing somewhere. It could be end of season. Like, I remember one year, it was the end of season. I went to Target for $25. I bought my kid this $300 blow up pool thing, like for the outdoors.
Right.
Well, I paid 10 cents on the dollar. Mm-hmm. We would always pay 10, like, and I was taught that as a kid. So, hey, you want Christmas presents now, or do you want to wait for 5 days after Christmas and everything is 75% off at the store in the toy aisle?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I can wait 5 days to get four times as much. So it was that delayed gratification.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was just learning those principles of how to make your money go far.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. I have to circle back, because when you said a lot of people are good at making money and not many are good at keeping money. So it's exactly where me and my wife are, right? I'm good at making money, but she is very good at keeping money. Let's put it that way. You know,
there you go.
She's
That's
always like,
match.
Hey, this is the budget. This is, and I'm like, hey, no, honey, I have to make more, you know? She's like, yeah, but if we can't control how much we're keeping, it doesn't matter how much more you're making, because we're always, you know, we're always even flat out because we can't keep it. But here's the thing that I believe. Of course, I'm an entrepreneur. I believe if you can't make money, then there is nothing to keep. So first, you have to make as much as you can in order to keep and invest as much as you can. But hey, talk to me about it.
You've been to England?
I have.
But what do they tell you when you get on the tube? Mind the gap.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. You need to mind the gap between what comes in and what goes out.
Mm.
In your mind, profit's an event. In her mind, profit's a habit. Okay.
Right.
So 100%. I don't care whether you make a dollar, $100,000, or $1,000,000.
Mm-hmm.
At a dollar, I'm going to learn to spend 80 cents. At $100,000, I'm going to learn to spend 80 grand. At $1,000,000, I'm going to learn to spend 800,000. Mm-hmm. But at each point, there is always the gap. I'm minding the gap. If you can't pull that gap out, you've got a problem. So I'll tell you one other thing. Let's look at compounding, because this is really where the power is, right? How much is a dollar doubled for 31 days? Give me a wild guess.
$200?
Yeah. A dollar doubled for 31 days. $1, right? That dollar your wife's holding on to is $1 billion.
Wow.
Okay? That is minding the gap and making it grow.
Wow. Now,
how much is a dollar doubled for 30 days because you waited till tomorrow to start?
Who?
This is simple math.
Now you're putting me on the spot.
This is real simple math. Because if we're doubling our dollar every day, and at day 31, I have $1 billion, how much did I have the day before? Half of what was there. $500 million. So by waiting till tomorrow, you lost $500 million. That is the power of compounding that I started when I was coming out of college, and I started saving and just keeping the gap apart, enjoying my life with what I had, but always making sure the gap was there and the gap was growing and the gap was invested. Now my money's making money for me instead of me making money for me. How many people do you know that have seven-figure businesses and they have nothing to show for it? It is the norm. It is not the exception.
Right. Okay. So, but when you get into, I'm processing everything you said, but when you get into investing, you also, you know, okay, now you got me on that. But when you get to investing, you also need to know where to invest, how to invest, in what to invest. Because in this day and age, we have so many opportunities that pop up all the time. Hey, invest in this. Invest in crypto. Invest in stock. Invest in this. Invest in startups. Okay, now what do I do? Do I just go take a portion of it, go for the safe thing? Or do I take a portion of it? I'm like, okay, 10% goes to high risk. 10% goes to crypto, 10% goes to stock market. You know, what do you see about that?
So all of this comes down to what we call expectancy investing. Expectancy says, what is the expected return and what are my chances of getting that? Okay. If I look at crypto, all over the place.
Right.
Right. It's very hard to do that math. It's basically gambling. Right? If I buy a Bitcoin, does it actually earn money? No. The only way my Bitcoin earns money is if I can find a bigger sucker.
Right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
If I invest in a company like Coca-Cola, every day Coca-Cola is selling Coca-Cola, and every day as a stockholder, I get a little bit of that. Mm-hmm. Right? Some companies are much better than other companies. Right now, tech is wild. Okay, that's the wave. Great. So the stock market is an opportunity. When I look at the stock market, I look at the stock market like going to a horse race. Okay, you can bet on a horse and hope to win, or I can bet that there's going to be a winner in the horse race. Okay, I don't care which horse races, but there's going to be a winner. I'd rather bet that there's going to be a winner. So investing diversified in the stock market's a great way to do that. Real estate has a proven track record. You can figure out the expectancy when you buy the real estate, because you know, if I buy this real estate, this is the rent I'm going to get. This is my mortgage. This is the gap. This is how much I can make. Now, if you're buying for speculation, you're back to the Bitcoin era. But if you're buying for cash flow, you can figure it out. You can plan it out. And it makes sense. As a business owner, we all say, oh, I'm going to reinvest in my business. I keep reinvesting my profits. Okay, let me ask you a question. When you reinvested your profit, okay, did you give yourself a loan for the profit and expect to get payment back?
No.
You just threw money out, right?
Right.
What was the expected return? Did you get it? Did you not? Where is that? And this is the problem in business. Everyone goes into business, oh, we got to spend money to make money. Lie. You don't necessarily have to do this. The best businesses are the ones that know what those investments look like, expect a return, actually get a return, and take that return out of the business and build another stream of income. Because let's face it, businesses go up and down. I don't care, you know, they come and go. And if you look, I think they say right now, half of the S&P 500 will be gone in 20 years. Like, it doesn't matter whether you're big or small. Bankruptcies happen all the time, right? Companies go out of business. The market changes. And so you've got to build multiple streams of income, in multiple different ways. And most of this is mathematical. If you can understand the math, it becomes easier. Everyone's trying to get rich this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it comes back to compounding. It's proven. If you just follow the compounding, you take your time, you can build wealth slowly that's guaranteed to happen. Or you can go out and gamble this weekend and good luck. Maybe you'll make money, maybe you won't. But even if you win money this weekend, I guarantee you you'll lose money next weekend, because at the end of the day, anything times zero is zero. And so you blow it all.
Mm-hmm. So but at what point do you believe a business owner should start taking profit off the table? And I have a feeling what you were going to say, but I'll ask it anyways.
Let me ask you a question.
Reinvest it into the business to grow it and then say, okay, when we get there, we take it off the table.
And that's the way most business owners think. Okay. Right. Did you go into business to be profitable?
Of course.
Well, then why aren't you profitable day one? Like, in a sense, you should be profitable the moment you start selling. And you mm-hmm. should be able to remove that profit. Now, if you want to reinvest it back into your business, okay, but reinvest it as a loan to yourself, because now you're investing in this business. Like, if you were to come to me and say invest in your business, do you think I would expect some sort of agreement of how I was mm-hmm. going to get my money back? But yeah, when you do it to yourself, where's right. the agreement?
Hmm.
So yeah, I think businesses should be profitable from day one. I understand that there is startup costs, and mm-hmm. we can talk about, like, you can at least say, okay, here's my startup capital, but every time a dollar comes in, I'm paying back that startup capital, right? Which is profit than repaying a loan. Okay. Fair enough, but you're still profitable day one, and you're building your company in that way. Otherwise, it's all going to be somewhere down the future. And the reality is, you might hit a hiccup before you get repaid. And then what? Now you get nothing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me ask you another question. What if someone starts a business with the goal in mind to exit it at some point when they get to a certain level, number, whatever? Do you still believe they should take money, profit off the table whenever possible, as soon as possible? Or do you believe in this case, okay, let's reinvest it in the business so we can grow this pie as big as possible and then sell it for a great multiple?
What is 8 times 0?
0.
There you go. Okay? This happens all the time. It comes back to the same. Is profit an event, which is what you're telling me, or is profit a habit? Why isn't your business growing, and why can't it fund its growth and still be profitable? Like, everyone wants to do this rapid growth, and if you look at the stats of private equity, and they play this game all day right. long. How many of the 10 businesses they invest in actually exit a winner?
That's a great question. I don't have the stats on top of my
head.
It's
one. Their batting average is 1 out of 10.
But that so one goes usually...
One goes through the roof. If right. they're good. If they're good. So if you're an average business owner, no experience or limited or medium experience, you're going to have to fail 9 times before you hit your 10th,
mm-hmm.
more than likely.
Wow.
Can you survive 9 failures? Do you have the gumption? Do you have mm-hmm. the grit? Do you have the ability? And even that time you walk away at the 10th, I know exactly what you're going to do. You're going to be like, honey, I blew it out. I'm going to go buy 10 more businesses, and you're going to start the game again, and you're going to get back on the hamster wheel, and you're going to blow. That's Mike Michalowicz's story from Profit First. He walked out with his payday from a business that was barely profitable. And in 2 to 3 years, he blew all that money reinvesting in other businesses to the point that it was all gone, and they had to come back. That's where Profit First comes from. That was the genesis of this. We've got to stop doing it. This is the glamour. This is not the reality.
Mm. Okay, Rocky, thanks for the coaching session. Let's go back. Let's go back and give us an idea of what you do actually and how you got here.
So my biggest aha, I assume business owners understood the business of business.
Mm.
Most business owners go into business to do what they love, and accounting's not on the list.
Right.
So they're not looking at their accounting statements. They've got no idea what's going on in their business. They're just like, I'm going to keep reinvesting and growing because one day I'll be profitable. Mm-hmm. One day I'll have an exit. One day. There's no math behind it. What I do and what I help business owners do is put all the math behind the business. And we can look at the business from a math equation from beginning to end. We start with, what does your lead flow look like? How much do those leads cost you? What are your conversion rates? What's your average selling price? What does that, you know, what's your customer retention rate? How does this now come into how much revenue? We can do the math to say, if you want this much revenue, this is what you need to do behind the scenes backward. And then once we know how much revenue, well, where's all my money going? What am I spending it on? What are employees, rent, cost of goods? All that stuff. And then that ends up being your profit. Okay. Here's the truth. Profit is fake. It is not real. Okay. Profit doesn't equal cash in the bank. The next bucket is, what happened to all my cash? It's in inventory. It's in accounts receivable. It's in equity that you borrowed. It disappears in all these different places. So understanding that. When you sit down and you can understand all of that and understand how it works and optimize it, then business becomes easy. Decisions become easy. You know where to put your time and effort. And you will know, hey, this is the 20% of what I need to do to produce 80% of my results. You went into business to have freedom, to work less and make more. Well, if you haven't done the math, you're going to struggle achieving that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so at what point come business owners to you for advice? That's my first question. And then my second question is, what differs you from a CFO? You know, because most business owners these days, either they have it in-house or they have someone as an advisor who is their, maybe it's a fractional CFO. You know, what is different from what you do than what they get usually from a CFO?
So we have programs for every level of business. Our one-on-one clients are generally 7- and 8-figure business owners. We do have programs for those who are not there yet or who are still planning it out. Here's the difference between me and a CFO. We're very, very similar, but our focus is more on how do we ensure profitability and cash flow. And while CFOs do that, a lot of them come from an accounting background. Mm-hmm. And so they come with that accounting mentality, not with the business owner mentality. We are CFOs for business owners who want to grow their business to be more profitable and doesn't want an accountant telling them you can't spend money. Mm-hmm. We believe in spending money when we know what the return is and we can see it and we've tested it and the math flows out. So most 7-figure business owners can't afford a CFO.
Right.
They can get someone fractional. The question now becomes, how good is the quality of the person you're working with? And what can they see? 8-figure business owners start to bring in CFOs. But again, it's the same question. Like, what can you afford? And can you get the quality that we provide within your system? And if you want more technical stuff, then yeah, go hire them. They're technical people. We're much more visionary and much more forward-thinking versus rearward-thinking.
And do you also get into the day-to-day numbers and no?
Yeah, yes and no. We'll help them build out dashboards and systems so they can see what the day-to-day is so that they're immediately aware if there's a problem. But I'm not getting into the accounting and the bookkeeping and the daily operations. All of that stuff is truly the job of a controller. And most people don't realize you've got your bookkeeper and you've got your CFO. The controller is truly the one doing a lot of that day-to-day operational stuff, making sure everything is flowing. So most companies, that's probably where they're making sure that that is at least being handled and that the finance operations are good and tuned up.
Okay, Rocky, help me close the gap. From I'm still like, okay, Rocky was in sales, he was having a good life, and now he got here. So help me close that gap, please.
So when I was 15 or 16, it was probably around 15 16, I made a crap ton of money and I walked in a computer store with $2,000 cash and I bought an Apple II computer. One of the first programs on that computer was VisiCalc. VisiCalc is the precursor to Lotus 1-2-3. Now it's all Excel. I've been playing with spreadsheets for 40 years. It's how everything gets done, right? Our grocery list is an Excel sheet. Thanksgiving dinner is an Excel sheet. Our finances are Excel sheets. You show me an Excel sheet and a tax return, I see the stories of the numbers. I've always had this skill. I never understood how valuable it was. I didn't understand how I could bring it together. So after a while of doing what I did, I had enough money that I had the ability to say, I don't want to do this anymore. What do I really want to do with my life? And I looked at the personal finance space. People in personal finance all want to make, they all want a lottery ticket. They don't actually want to do the work to compound their money. And then the aha came that business owners weren't looking at their numbers. And I'm like, oh my God, you're kidding me. Like, I can build you a spreadsheet, figure out the systems and show you what's going on so you can make better decisions. And so when that occurred, that's when I said, this is truly what I love doing. It's fun for me. And I can get paid for it. I'm done. Like, I walked away and I will never, I don't care how big a check they write me, I would never go back to the life. I finally found that perfect fit for me. I just didn't realize, like, I just didn't realize the value that was there in what I could do.
And what was the entry point for you? Was it the book that I see behind you? For the ones that are listening to this, it's obviously Profit First.
Well, Profit First was later, and Profit First was a choice. Like, I was looking at a bunch of different programs. I was looking at building my own. And honestly, the reason I liked Profit First was I'd been living Profit First for 30 plus years. So all they did was already put the things that I naturally was doing into words for business owners. Mike goes out and he does a lot of the promotion and he's built up. I don't have time and I don't have any desire to go do that part of the business. So it's much easier to connect with a brand and let them do what they love to do and me do what I love to do. And it was a perfect partnership. I did look at other systems. There wasn't the match because most of them, like you talk about, they were so accounting and process focused. And I'm like, I don't want to do accounting and process. I want to help business owners make money. And a lot of them really didn't focus that way or focus on how to extract cash from the business. So it was a mentality differential. So that was kind of where Profit First came to be. But it was like that book really opened my eyes up to the fact that business owners were struggling. It never crossed my mind. I just assumed they knew how to make and keep money.
So when do they come to you? When do business owners come to you? Is it usually when they make a lot of money and they're like, okay, I don't know what to do with it? Or is it the opposite? They have a huge pain point. They make revenue, but they're like, hey, where does all this money go to?
I wish it was the first. It's usually the second. They're generating seven figures in revenue, eight figures in revenue. And they're like, you know, we were going to make profit and we were going to make profit. And here we are with three, four, five, 10 million in revenue. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing to show for it. And that is not outside the norm. It is probably much more the norm than not, unfortunately, in the world of business.
Mm-hmm. You know, when we talk about this and I put myself in the shoes or in the seat of the business owner, I'm like, okay, sometimes, regardless of how much money they're making, if the system, let's say if the profitability is not there, then there is something in the system that needs to be fixed. As an example, hey, your product, how much you're making it or how much you're producing it, and how much you're selling it for is not aligned. You know, your profit margin is not aligned. So you got to fix that first. Then your employee and the cost of the team that you're hiring is too high. You need to go. So tell us more about that, how you work with these business owners.
We literally, I can look at their results and I can look at their tax returns and their numbers and I can see that clear as day.
Mm.
It tells me that story. We can see what the pain points are and then we have to brainstorm a solution. So Is the solution just increasing prices, right? Maybe the solution is cutting costs, reviewing labor, sourcing somewhere else, finding a different sales platform. Like, what is the constraint and how do we break through the constraint? That's basically what it comes down to. Now, some business models just aren't going to work. Some business models do. Or you have to reinvent the business model. Are you at all familiar with the Savannah Bananas?
I'm not.
The Savannah Bananas is the most profitable baseball team in America.
Okay.
Now, when I say most profitable, I mean percentage-wise.
Right.
Okay? Jesse Cole and his wife own the business. His wife was on my podcast, Profit Answer Man, talking about how they do this. They bought a minor league baseball team. Here's the secret of minor league baseball. You lose money. Right? Mm-hmm. So he buys his team. He looks at it. He goes, wait a minute. He reads the profit first book. He goes, this is a money-losing business. I have no money. I can't lose it. Right? He did it because of the love of baseball, I think. So he started to sit down and reimagine, how do I redo this business so that it is profitable? Mm-hmm. Today, if tickets go on sale this morning for next year, they're sold out in minutes.
Wow.
Right? He has figured out how to entertain people, how to have fun, and how to do it for the least amount of money, right?
And that he's asking from them.
What's that?
That he, so you say for the least amount of money that he is asking from them?
What he's spending too.
Gotcha.
So think about it. When, you know, he looked at the problem. You go to a baseball game today. What do you think? You think it's cheap or expensive?
To be honest with you, I haven't been in a baseball game ever. I've been in a football game.
Whatever game you go to these right. days, it's expensive for a family.
100%. Absolutely.
And then you walk in and what's the first thing the kid says? Buy me ice cream.
Buy me something to eat, to drink.
And what he did, he's come up with a one price for the ticket. It includes your food.
Oh,
you go out and you have a great time. What's the entertainment? He's got grandmas dancing on the field. He's got baby races where they've got one-year-olds crawling on the field. He doesn't have to pay them. If your baby's crawling on the field, your whole family's coming to that game, right? So think about it. He's built a marketing and a delivery system where everybody is having fun. He doesn't have to worry about hiring employees. He doesn't have that problem because people love the culture he's built. He's reverse engineered his business to always be profitable.
So hold on.
Thought through it.
Are you saying they pay a flat rate for the ticket, and once they get in, they can eat and drink all they want, included in the flat rate?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
He's changed the experience. They sell out like you would not believe.
Wow.
It's about building culture. It's about testing everything. Literally, if there's something going on that field for 90 seconds, it's because they've tested it and tested it and tested it. They've tried it. They've tweaked it. They've improved it. They are constantly doing wild and crazy. Their clients are their raving fans because they're part of the story.
I love that.
It's an experience.
Now, immediately, you know where I'm at? I'm immediately, okay, how can I make this immigrant entrepreneur's experience for our community and for our audience something like this that they become raving fans?
And that is the question. How do you do that? Now, by the way, we have not talked about the curse of immigration and immigrants.
Right.
Right. So here is the curse. And I knew that. And I was very intentional. The first generation comes here, right? They take the risk. They work hard. The second generation tends to have dramatic success. And what did that second generation do to the third?
They pass it on.
They pass it on, but do they pass on the hard work or do they protect them from the hard work? They give them an easy life. And you know what that third generation does? It blows all the money. And the process starts over. And that is the problem. If you are in that first or second generation, you have to make sure that you teach your third generation and fourth generation grit. And that they have to work and that there is an expectation there. We're not just going to shower you in luxury now that we've all made it.
That is so good, Rocky. He's probably one of the greatest things I've heard on the entire podcast so far, not only with you, all the shows so far, seriously. Because when I'm looking around myself, I have so many immigrant entrepreneurs that are very successful. And I would say, I'm not saying all of them, but the majority of them, their kids, hey, they're having an easy life because mama and papa worked for it, right? They came to the US, to Europe, to Switzerland, wherever. They had nothing. Most of them, they had nothing. They worked hard for it. They made it happen. Now the kids are having a great life and they just enjoy it. And of course, another thing. As an immigrant, because you had not much, now you want your kids somehow to enjoy what you were not able to enjoy. But are you doing them a favor? I don't think so.
No, we had a simple saying in our house, and our kids know it. Your parents are rich, you're poor. We'll help you, but you're going to have to figure it out. You're going to have to take responsibility. And we taught them not to get caught up in all of the trappings of wealth. Like, you can have a wonderful life. We can do wonderful things. We can go out and enjoy, but there's no expectation that you're going to get, you know, $100 jeans and $200 sneakers, because that ain't happening.
But then again, how do you do that? You know, it takes a lot of self-awareness and also removing, I believe it's also removing your ego, because You came to this country as a nobody. You had to make it work. Now, obviously, you want your kids and loved ones that are your kids to have a great life. But again, you're not doing them a favor. But hey, it's easier said than done. How do you do that?
Yeah, you do. You have to remove the ego of it and realize that most of what you're seeing is at the end of the day, you have a choice. Either you're going to make yourself rich or you're going to make someone else rich, right? Which do you want? And I'm not against enjoying a nice life. Mm-hmm. I mean, we'll go out and we'll drop enormous amounts of money on a wonderful dinner. Mm-hmm. But at the end of dinner, I'm going to sit with my kids and go, hey, here's what the bill was. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is what we paid. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Was it worth the money? Was it worth the experience? And honestly, more often than not, I think it's not usually a strong thumbs up most of the time, especially when you start comparing it with how much it cost. We know how to cook. We know how to, you know, but at the same point, we know how to fly first class. But, you know, you can fly first class without paying for first class. There are ways to do that. Figure it out. And designer clothes and all that stuff, we just don't care. Like, it, the really rich don't wear labels, right? Mm-hmm. So be like them, have nice things, have quality stuff, and you can buy quality at a discount. There's ways to do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's up to you. Have to figure out what you want out of life. You have to be very intentional, figure out what you want, figure out a plan, and then live in accordance with the plan. Most people are in the drift. They're just doing whatever they're told to do or what their neighbor's doing or what they've been conned into buying.
Rocky, did you grow up with this mindset or did you figure it out and learned it as you went along the way?
So, you know, my other podcast is Richer Soul. The tagline is, you got rich, now what? Because I got all the money and there was no happiness.
Right.
It's like, huh. All right, this didn't work. Now what? And it was realizing to step away from a lot of that and learning to let go and realizing that, you know, the stories and the things that I was told weren't real. And there's a game being played around you. And if you don't realize it, then you're the sucker in the game. Yeah, it's that simple.
So how do you master the game?
I think you got to figure out that there's a game going on. Mm-hmm. I don't think most people even realize there's a game going on. And then B, you have to learn that you don't have to play the game. You can define your own game and set your own rules. And I'll tell you, when you start doing that, everyone's going to look at you and they're going to, you know, they're going to denigrate you. They're going to look at you weird. They're going to say stuff. But watch what happens in 5 or 10 years when compounding occurs. Because all of a sudden, you're sitting here with time freedom. Because you have money, you have a nice life, you're not running around like crazy, you get into the gym, you're looking good, and they gain 10 pounds, and they're more stressed, and they still don't have enough money, and it's tomorrow, and they're looking at you going, how the hell does he look so good? Mm. How is he not that? But that takes time.
Mm. So what is... You know, when you compare immigrants with non-immigrants and you see the things that immigrants do well, but also not so well, because obviously the things that separate them are the things that they do well. But what are the things that they can improve and work on and improve? Yeah.
So I think if you're willing to pick up and move across the world and start over, you've got grit. And that right there is powerful. I think where they struggle in the beginning is I don't know what the opposite of ego is, but they don't feel like they're enough, right? People look down at them. Maybe they don't speak the language. They have an accent. They dress different. They eat, whatever it is. And then what happens, though, is when they're successful is they go to the opposite end. Then they got to show that they're... So that whole ego game of... Am I enough versus the ego gets played out. And it's learning to step out of it at both ends of the spectrum and learn, hey, I'm just starting over. I understand I'm here, but I'm going to go there and that's okay. And the other thing is just realizing even here in America, people who've been here for hundreds of years, their families are poor. There's many, you know, it's all what you're going to compare yourself to. And they're stuck because they're just generational belief systems. I don't know when they break through of that.
Right. You know, I was talking, it's been some time, I was talking to another very successful immigrant entrepreneur, and he said something that stuck with me. He said, usually the immigrants that come with no money, they succeed. And usually the ones that who come with a lot of money, they also succeed. But those that come with a little bit of money and, you know, feel like they know all about it, and they struggle because they, at some point, they have to realize, hey, the money that I took with me to this country is not going to get me that far. So I have to start all over again and go back to step one.
And I would say the people who come here with a lot of money, I don't think they necessarily create success here. They already had success.
Right.
So it's not that they've come here and done something great. Mm-hmm. They just come here and enjoyed it. or they've taken the skills that they already built money with and continued it. But generational wealth is not something that's very, very hard. You know, we started with making money's easy, keeping money's hard. Building generational wealth is even harder, which is passing the money down in such a way that the kids are good stewards and grow it and continue to grow it and then pass to the next generation.
So when you say it's harder, it's because of the knowledge and the education in regards to money spending and wealth creation they need to have, or why is it harder?
Because the parents don't teach them grit.
Hmm.
Right? Things are too easy. Mm-hmm. They've never learned how to struggle. Too many doors have been opened. And they haven't. There's a whole opposite side to that. When kids are born into a lot of money, they don't feel they deserve it. And so they have guilt. And then they go give it all away. Whatever. So there's all these money scripts that I think people need to understand. What is your relationship to money? What is money? And how are we going to have that conversation around money with ourselves? And how do we look at it? And teaching that to kids, like in America, they don't teach money. And if, you know, if you're not teaching your kids money and values, and you're not demonstrating, it's really hard to say, you know, say, behave this way, and you're not behaving that way. And that in there is kind of the problem.
By the way, why do you think money is not talked about? Because, you know, we talk about everything. We even talk about sex and religion more sometimes than we talk about money. Why is it that way?
For whatever reason, I think it's a taboo subject. So I don't know. Maybe it's people who aren't great with money, even if they have money, are afraid to admit it. Maybe who's going to teach you money? Like, let's face it. I'm very kind of anti our current education system. Like, they don't even understand money. So how are they going to teach your kids money? Right. You go to college, right? And I go take a class on business. Is the guy teaching the class, has he ever been a business owner, or is he a professor? Has he ever actually run a business? Like, how is he supposed to teach me? I have an MBA. Most of those people were nuts. Like, they don't actually know how to do anything. So I think it's just kind of what's become. And if your parents don't know about money, then how are you supposed to learn?
Absolutely. Wow. Hell of a discussion, I'm telling you. And, you know, as I was listening to you sharing all this wisdom with us, I'm planning on a live event for immigrant entrepreneurs, and we will definitely make it happen to have you on to talk about money, because I believe we really need to talk more about money, but also talk more about money within entrepreneurship.
Oh, we do. I mean, that's what I do all the time.
Right.
I talk about how do business owners have a more profitable and growing business mm-hmm. where they work less. There's this whole grind it out culture.
Right.
I am out. Like, I'm not grinding it out. Okay. You went into business to have freedom mm-hmm. and money. And if you are not enjoying freedom and have money, then you need to fix the business. Mm-hmm. Right. Just change your business model, make tweaks. It is a lot easier than you can imagine. You just have to understand where can you put the least amount of effort to make the biggest difference. So I'll give you an example. Like, one of my guys who I talked to, he had a pressure washing business, right?
Right.
In the winter, he put up Christmas lights. So when you think of that, what do you think of? Go, okay, he's got this pressure washing business and he needs to keep the doors open in the winter to pay people, cover the bills. Mm-hmm. I looked at his business. I go, dude, 80% of your profit's coming from Christmas lights. Wow. You can stop pressure washing. You can take 8 months of the year off, mm-hmm. push your time into your Christmas lights, mm-hmm. and you will make so much more money working less. Okay? Today he drives a Maserati because he listened. Not mm-hmm. everybody listens. Mm-hmm. Right? Honestly, and the other business, I had another business owner. And again, we just told him, just because you have money doesn't mean you need to spend it. And that little shift in working with me, making sure he didn't spend it, 3 years, he had $1 million in cash. Taxes already paid. Hmm. On top of his salary. Right. And he was only a 6-figure business owner. This isn't like he had a 10-figure, you know, a big business. Mm-hmm. These principles work when you follow them. You just got to do it. And mm-hmm. everybody's looking for fancy, complicated solutions. Simple, basic stuff works. And, mm-hmm. I think that's what people don't get.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love that. Thank you. So, Rocky, before you tell us where people can find you and how they can get in touch with you and, you know, learn from you, tell us any final wisdom you have to any successful entrepreneurs, aspiring entrepreneurs, or those who want to become one.
I think the first thing is to have a little gratitude and learn to say thank you. So let's practice this. Wherever you're listening to Ali right now, find the like button and hit it. That's how you show thank you and gratitude to him for bringing this to you. Then find another immigrant and share this podcast with them and say, you got to listen to this. We got to start having a conversation about how we can do it better. That was the biggest thing my family had. They had other immigrants who were in the same situation from the same place, always talking about how to do it better. You do those two things, and things will be wonderful.
Absolutely. That's a great point. And final point, actually. Rocky, a big thank you to you. I know you're a busy man and have so many things going on. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing all the wisdom, all the money talks we had. Please tell us where our audience can find you and can follow you and maybe even work with you.
So, the website is profitcomesfirst.com. If you want to learn about business finances and how to make more money, it's Profit Answer Man. That's where we teach that. If you've got the money and you want to live life, it's Richer Soul. That's where we teach you how to live the ultimate life, bringing harmony to all the different areas and helping you to lead the ultimate life.
Thank you so much. I can't wait to connect with you in person and have conversations like this in person. Once again, Rocky, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was a pleasure and honor to have you on the show, and all the best.
Thank you.